In the last class, we described a multi-band system. And so let's just summarize the picture. Here we have a lattice formed by atoms. An atom may have different orbitals labeled by this A and B. Okay. Then we can have a hopping, say from one side to the other side. And the hopping amplitude is TAB, say hopping from A orbital to B orbital. But the hopping amplitude only depends on how far they hop. Do not depend on where they start, where they end. It just depends on how far they hop. So this N is a separation between I and J. Okay. So therefore, we can have a Hamiltonian, the hopping Hamiltonian written in terms of this hopping amplitude. Okay. And what we did in last class is that we rewrite this Hamiltonian in a momentum basis or in a wave vector basis. Yeah. Where N is a total number for a lattice size. And so in a wave vector basis, we find that we can partially diagonalize this Hamiltonian in a sense. In a wave vector basis, the K wave vector became conserved. So it do not change. And only A and B orbital index have mixing. And this matrix M can be reconstructed from the hopping amplitude, and which is a K-dependent matrix with the index with labeled orbitals. So if we consider N orbitals, they will be the N by N matrix. Okay. So therefore, all the information of this single particle hopping system is encoded in this K-dependent matrix M. The M is Hermitian because Tn and T minus n have a certain relation. So M is a Hermitian matrix. Okay. Then to obtain the eigenvalue and the eigenvector and the eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian, we simply need to diagonalize the M matrix. If you diagonalize the M matrix for every K, because for every K, we have a different N by N matrix. So we diagonalize M matrix for every K. Then the eigenvalue, we have an eigenvalue labeled by alpha. So alpha is 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera, which label different eigenvalue of the M matrix. Certainly for different K, we have different eigenvalue. And this eigenvalue actually is the energy of the particle. It has an N band if we have considered N orbitals. So as K as the energy. So this is the epsilon 1 as function of K. And this could be the epsilon 2 as function of K, and et cetera. So that's energy band. Okay. And certainly, for each eigenvalue, we also have an eigenvector, which is a 1 by N matrix, or n-dimensional vector, which is also a function of K. Okay, so that is that's an eigenvector of this M matrix. Okay, so once we get this energy band, for a long time we believe, at least we thought, we know it's the semi-classical motion of the particle. Because in a vacuum, the energy band actually have a standard form, which is epsilon k equal to k squared over 2m. Here I always assume h bar equal to 1. Okay. So for the vacuum, we assume this, and then we can have this then we using this epsilon k, we can have the equation motion. But actually, this can be generalized to any dispersion relation, you know, any function of a momentum and energy relation, momentum energy relation. For any momentum energy relation, we can have we can generalize this classic equation motion as this. You know, this is this really like a group velocity for wave, because this in quantum mechanics, energy is like the frequency. So the group velocity is like a partial omega, partial k. So therefore, in the wave picture, the group velocity is just a partial omega, partial k, or partial energy, partial k. So this is just a group velocity. Okay. And without external potential, the k dot equal to 0. Because in our case, the k is conserved. K is, a well-defined conserved. So without external potential, k dot actually equal to 0. But if we add external potential, so in addition to this uniform lattice, we also add additional smooth potential, then k dot no longer conserved, and then we can have this picture. The change in momentum is equal to the force. Okay, so this is the equation motion. So once we, in this case, once we obtain the dispersion relation for each band, then we can study the semi-classical motion of a particle in each band. And each band have a different dispersion relation, so the semi-classical dynamics can be very different. At least, for example, the mass can be very different. That's like the curvature near the bottom band can be different in different materials. So therefore, if particle only move near the bottom band, we can assume, approximately think, dispersion relation is like k squared over some kind of m star. And m star is different in different materials. So this is the concept of effective mass in a semiconductor. But however, in this class, I want to show that this semi-classical equation motion actually is not quite correct. And I call this Newton's dynamics. This is like the acceleration equal to the force. That's Newton's dynamics. But actually, in general, for semiconductors, it's not quite right. So why it's not quite right? Let me give you the answer, then I do the calculation. The reason it's not right is the following. It corresponds to this the eigenvector. Okay. So you can see, as a particle, you can see if you have an external potential, the momentum is no longer conserved, no longer fixed. It starts to drift. So this particle can drift, momentum can drift from one place to another place. Okay. But as the momentum drifts around, different momentum actually have different eigenvectors.
Why is the momentum
drift? Because we apply the external potential.
Okay, like
electric field. Like electric field. Without that, the electric field momentum don't drift. Yeah, totally right. The particle stay with one momentum and therefore release the eigenstate. But we apply another force, another potential, additional force, the momentum will drift. If this force is very weak, then it won't. This force just cause particle drift within one band rather than go to the interband transition. So that's for the smooth weak force. And but however, in the multi-band case, when the momentum drifts, the eigenvector starts to change. It's no longer the same eigenvector because each component depends on k. So therefore, the mixing of orbital are different at different k. So the mixing of orbital also changes. This should remind you of something since you're learning the GR in the previous class. this is fiber bundle. Fiber bundle, or this like a tangent space. You know, in a GR, you have the concept that for every spatial space-time point, you have vector space, and then different space point, you have different vector space, and there's connection between them. And this is one example of that. So let's consider this one-dimensional vector space. This is, you know, each eigenvector is like one-dimensional vector space. It's a subspace of n-dimensional vector space. But this is one-dimensional subspace. But here, I want to emphasize that here, this one-dimensional subspace is a wonderful subspace, and here we had another subspace, different subspace changes. And so this may affect how particle moves. You can see that's what it makes it suspicious. You know, this formula, this picture, don't take into data into account. They say if vector space change or not change for different k, in this formulation, they don't care. As if it doesn't matter. But on the other hand, the field should matter. And there's a, in particular, if curvature not equal to zero, that means so what is the curvature? Okay, let's postpone that. Okay, anyway, so that is to make this suspicious. It is because for every position of k, you have a one dimensional vector space described by this eigenvector, and a different k, these vector space are different. And how different vector space related, as I have a connection. And one may wonder, this connection may enter the equation motion. So that is a key observation here. So probably people in kinetic matter should learn GR, because they've learned GR, they probably realized this long time ago. Okay, so this is just a thinking. So let's just do a calculation to show that indeed the changing vector space or this connection somehow affect equation motion, and this equation motion should be modified. This equation should be modified. One should know if you just guess it, it's not quite complete. Yes. I think the most systematic understanding is probably just 5 or 6 years. Yeah. In terms of these connections. Yeah. This may be known before, but it may be in some different form. I don't know about the real history. At least people from Russia did a lot of work, but it's maybe written in a different form.
This work was done in the 60s.
In the 60s? Yeah. And that's in the Boltzmann, in Boltzmann transport theory.
Yeah.
I heard something, but more recently people using this connection to understand that, but before, in Boltzmann transport, this kind of thing would appear. Okay, so let's see how how the equation motion is modified, and so this again we're using this coherent state approach, and how do we use a coherent state approach? So we write down this eigenstate. So this is not eigenstate. This is just a state in the K space. So what is an eigenstate. So the eigenstate is this k a, and then we have this alpha a sum over a. That is the eigenstate. I just write down the eigenvector, the total eigenvector, in terms of eigenvector of the N matrix. Okay. So this eigenvector have a property that when you apply this Hamiltonian to this eigenvector, it's a K. You get epsilon alpha K. Alpha is a fixed. So, okay, then I can write this further. this in the K space. So in the real space, we can have this. R alpha A is K e to the I K dot I. So in the real space, I A. OK. So in this form, it's pretty clear. So this eigenstate of the Hamiltonian have a piece like a plane wave, you know. It's a dependence on the position, just plane wave. You know, e to the I, K, X, just plane wave. But however, the different orbital have certain mixing, you know. For each eigenstate, the different orbital enter with different amplitude. But this amplitude depends on the wave vector K also. So that's a this psi r alpha A describe for the alpha's eigenstate how different orbital labeled by A can mix in. Okay, that's basically that's a picture. So how to obtain the coherent states? So we start from these plane wave states. You know, the coherent states are like wave packet states. These plane wave states have no sense of position. And in the classic analog, we want something with a position and a momentum. This one has momentum. This is a wave vector momentum. But it don't have position. So the only thing we need to do to make this state have a position. So how to do that? Well, let's do this x, k states labeled by alpha. So this is states. This is the states in the alpha span. So alpha is fixed. So in one node band here. So we always fix alpha. Okay. But for this alpha span, we have wave packet with position x and k. And this plane wave state only have a k, don't have x. So let's make a x out of it by doing the starting from here. Let me see what I used here. X I minus x square over c square. Let me see. Two plus c square. Okay. And then we have this. Just Kc, 2 Kc squared. Yeah, we don't have Kc2, just Kc squared. Yeah, unfortunately, it's very hard to distinguish Kc2 and Kc squared. Okay, and so we just add this a Gaussian wave packet. Okay, so you recognize that these two terms are really a Gaussian wave packet with a boost. So this is what we use in the harmonic oscillator problem to describe the wave packet moving back and forth. It's like x is a center wave packet, k is a momentum, average momentum wave packet. And this kc is a width of wave packet. Yes?
Does it depend on the fact that it's a Gaussian or just the general properties of this?
This is a very good question. Actually, I don't know. If you choose a symmetric wave function, whether there's an additional term coming out in the effective Lagrangian, that I don't know. Yeah. But generally, I believe generally this x have a sense of a position, k have a sense of momentum. This probably is okay. It won't change. If you ask me to guess, maybe there are some higher order terms. you may make some additional higher order terms. The reason is that when you choose a Gaussian, there's a spatial inversion symmetry parity. So if you choose some other wave function which break parity symmetry, you may get effective Lagrangian, which contain term which break parity symmetry, maybe some higher order terms. That's a concern. Yeah. Okay.
And then when we project it onto x, we have our wave function. So here, what do you mean by xka?
Okay.
Xk alpha.
Yeah. So this xk, that's a very good question. This xk became a parameter. It's no longer a variable. So that's why in the wave in the oscillator we call this kc1, this kc2. Try to not confuse with the dynamical variable we always call x. And here, I didn't do that. This x and the k are really just it's a parameter wave function. It's not a dynamical variable. And so you can see this is a whole wave function. This whole wave function is contained this parameter x and this parameter k.
So how did you get this?
Again, this is a guess.
Oh,
yeah. So the motivation is the following. Without this, these are plane wave states. So it's hard to develop classical dynamics using plane wave states because they have no position. So to develop classical dynamics, to have a semi-classical picture of this quantum theory, we should be using wave packing. Because the classical particle corresponds to wave packing. So that's what we do here. We actually construct quantum wave packet. This is Gaussian wave packet. So this and this is Gaussian wave packet. And for this wave packet, this x corresponds to the like the position of a classical particle. In the case, like a maximum classical particle. So this is so therefore using this quantum coherence space. In quantum theory, xk gets two parameters, like coherence state labeled by this two parameters. And then using this quantum coherence space, we can derive this phase space, like Lagrangian, in terms of x and k. And that x and k may correspond to x and k of classical, the expected classical. So this is actually the motivation topic. And there are some choice, you know, how to choose this wave function. And maybe there are some fine details. Like, if you choose it incorrectly, you may get something, some effect which is not there. Yes. Okay. But once you write down this wave function, we can immediately write down this phase space like one, which contain a Barrier space term. So now here we think this x and k depend on t now. We think this x and k depend on t. They are dynamical variable, but only in a classical sense. So we consider the time-dependent wave function, x and k depend on t. And then we have this average x, k, r, average component, x. So what is the average energy? The average energy is pretty simple. It's simply just epsilon r alpha k. As an approximation, because here we assume kc is pretty big. So it's a very smooth wave packet. So therefore, in this wave function, the k is pretty definite. The delta k is only like 1 over kc. And we choose kc to be much, we choose Cassie to be much bigger than lattice constant. So therefore, uncertainty of K is weak. So when we calculate the average Hamiltonian, we can assume K is definite. Then this Hamiltonian act on this just gives us the eigenvalues. So that's just eigenvalues. Okay. And we can go beyond this, a little bit beyond that. We can also add a potential term. And suppose this potential is very smooth, changing slowly over the distance of a lattice scale. Okay. And therefore, for each wave packet, because this one is localized, this wave packet is localized in real space with the size of C. If potential changes very smoothly, then inside this wave packet, we can treat V as a constant. If V is a constant, it just shifts energy up and down by a constant. And so therefore, we can have a Vx. We just add a constant in this wave packet. So this is the assumption that if a potential is very smooth at the scale of Kc, then we can treat this as a constant, then this average energy is just that. Okay. Then what is this barospace term? Well, this barospace term is this barospace term, actually, we already calculated barospace term. If you ignore this, if you only use these two part of wave function, this is identical to the harmonic oscillator problem. Just a Gaussian wave packet. And for the Gaussian wave packet, because barospace term do not depend on the Hamiltonian, only depend on wave function. If you only look at this part of wave function, just this Gaussian wave packet, then this barospace term is done. And that is the barospace term. You can just say x k I d d t. So this one, I think, is a minus x k dot. This is what we get in the previous case. We only using this Gaussian wave packet. Okay. But here I'm a little quick. But here I want to say the following. Our wave function contains two p's. You know, this is just a basis vector. But wave function has an orbital piece. So this Gaussian wave packet is the orbital piece. It also contains the internal piece. You can see our basis vector contains the position under this internal index A. And the internal piece is psi r alpha A, also contains this internal piece. They have two pieces. And then here we're using this. So therefore, this wave function is almost like this xk. It's like a wave function psi tensor product with this Gaussian wave packet. So this tensor is like a tensor product of two wave functions. And the barospace term and this kind of barospace connection have a property that we have a tensor product. Like we have this, if you have this, suppose if say AB is a tensor product of A and B, then the barospace connection. Or this barospace term, actually the sum of the two is A plus To derive this, actually pretty simple. The DDT may act on this A. So we get this, but then that's left B alone. Then the B just equal to 1, so it just drops. And it's just that. Okay. So it is using this picture, using this formula, we try to understand the contribution of this barrier phase from this wave function. We say this will have two pieces. Orbital piece is a Gaussian wave packet. That's something we discussed before. That gave us this minus x times k dot. Okay? And then it have this this internal piece. That's give us additional contribution to the barrier phase. Okay. And this internal piece is simply equal to plus I psi alpha A star K DDT psi alpha AK. The A, so here A is assumed to be sum. Let me write down. A is a sum. Alpha is not sum. So this A is a sum. Alpha is not sum. Okay. So this is a contribution from this part. Okay. And if you actually you can really substitute this whole wave function into this formula and really get this. But here I just explain the structure, so I didn't really do the calculation here. And this part can be rewritten as a CI KI dot. Okay. And where the CI, really don't have much room here. Where the CI is function K, which is equal to I psi star N alpha A sum over A and partial KI. And this psi actually is function k. This is a function k. It's really this. And this is a connection. This actually is a connection of a so-called fiber bundle. It's really compare this one is like a change of this one-dimensional vector space. You know, when you're changing k, how much changed? So this change dot into the original direction. Yeah. Okay. So it have a meaning of a vector potential in the k space. So look at this form. Remember, the vector potential AI, when they couple to in the how they appear in the Lagrangian? They appear AI appear in Lagrangian as AI coupled to the velocity XI dot. And then this vector potential AI gave us BIJ, which is a partial IAJ minus partial JAI. And this BIJ, this anti-symmetric tensor, actually is a magnetic field. So we have A as a vector potential, B as a magnetic field. Now that's so A, B is used, so now we use C. C is a vector potential, but now it's a vector potential in the K space. And it's coupled to the K dot. So there's some symmetry. So therefore, this term is like, Ci, now it's coupled to the K dot. And then certainly we have a D. Maybe using this capital B. We have a dij, which is a partial I cj minus partial j ci. But now this partial I actually let's do the ki, kj. So derivative in the k space, because c is a function of k. Not like ai is a function of x. So c is function of k. So in the k space, we can do this, we can construct similarly a magnetic field in K space. Or everything is parallel to real space. And this is like a curvature, you know. You will have a connection. Non-zero connection does not mean you have non-zero curvature. If A is a pure gauge, it corresponds to zero magnetic field. But if this combination of A is non-zero, means that this connection have a non-zero effect. Similarly, C have a similar story. C could be a pure gauge, then it would have no effect. But however, if D is non-zero, that means C represents something non-trivial, So it may affect equation motion. And that's basically the story. That's how this connection appear in a phase space Lagrangian through the Barrier phase term. You can see the Barrier phase term is not just this. If you just take this one, we get a standard equation motion. That's what I write down before. So what we missed is this term. And this term is because only appear in multi-boundary case, because this vector this eigenvector may change in k-space, and it may give you a non-trivial connection or curvature. Yes?
Yeah,
question.
So, why is it only in multi-band space?
Okay. In a single band space, in a single band case, we don't have one A. Okay. And then we can write this psi alpha A. Because A is only one, so it's only a phase, really, e to the I. You can write down theta k. It's only a phase. There's no other choice. You know, in a single band picture, this is a normalized wave function with only one component. So we can choose this equal to one, actually. But if you like, you can choose this to be a phase, which is not normalization fixed has to be a phase. Otherwise, it's not normalized. If this is a phase, then you can just plug this into here. A just take a single value of 1. Then this ci just became, if you plug in, you can do a calculation, you see this becomes minus partial ki and theta k. So it's a derivative of the scalar function. And that's pure gauge. And then if you do this, you find D equal to 0 for this case. So therefore, single band, we don't have this phenomena. Only for multi-band case, because single band, you only have one orbital. There's no different mixing. This effect is because a different K point, different orbital have a different mixing and different K point. So therefore, we have a local direction. You have a sense of local direction. If you only have one orbital, there's every local direction is the same, just this one orbital, no other choice. Yeah.
So psi alpha does not have to be normalized in K space?
It is normalized, because this is normalized eigenvector. So this is I didn't say that, this is a psi alpha diagram. Because this formula is correct only for normalized states. So this Gaussian wave height, yeah, I'm sorry. There's a parameter here dependent on the C device, a normalized Gaussian orbital prime. But this prime is normalized by itself.
I was just wondering, is there a non-abelian analog which arises in these condensed matter systems?
Very, very good. The answer is yes, it's finite degenerate.
I see.
That's a very, very good question. And if finite degenerate, there's non-abelian analog. You're here, each band, this eigenvalue is not degenerate. So therefore, if you follow a band, then this in the fiber bundle language, it's in fact a one-dimensional vector space at every k point. When you have one-dimensional vector space at every k point, you get this U1 connection.
Right.
Because, but however, for some reason, if a band are degenerate, so there's two eigen, if this alpha, if this one are degenerate, so there's two alpha have the same epsilon. And then it's good enough. Actually, that's very, very interesting. Yes.
So it seems like the connections are coming from the bands and
that's fine.
And not the necessarily the phase. So why did you have to introduce the x coordinate again?
What connection? Oh, this one?
Yeah. I mean, I see that it gives you your xk dot, but
yeah.
Is there any other
to calculate this c, I think a ck dot term, you don't need to introduce the x. The x part introduced to recover is a semi-classical dynamics. You need a wave packet. So that's what you introduce, just simply to recover semi dynamics. And the message here is that because of this eigenvector are different k point, the semi-classical phase space on Lagrangian have this extra confusion. This extra confusion, like the magnetic field in k space. That's it. Okay. So once we have this ck, so can the ck is this bound. So ck is something you can calculate directly from M. If you know this matrix M, you can get the eigenvector, then from eigenvector, you can get this ck. So it's really come from the band structure, this actual information from the band structure. So what is the consequence? So let me just go through this very quickly. So therefore, the phase space Lagrangian would have this kx dot. So I just drop the total time derivative term to make this kx dot more standard one. And then we have this ci, which is function of ki dot, and minus this h, which is function of x and k. So this is a So this is the phase space Lagrangian we derived. The really new message is the ck is from here. So once we get this real space, this phase space Lagrangian, let me just follow the standard trick to derive equation motion. And so I will not spend much time on that. Let me just write down the answer. And the equation motion we obtain is k dot is equal to minus partial v partial x. Okay, here we assume this h is a epsilon alpha k plus vx. So then the vx would affect k dot. And so the c don't appear here. What appears interesting is the meaning velocity is changed. The meaning velocity is a partial epsilon alpha k partial ki. So this is a usual thing. This group velocity. It's like partial omega, partial k is a group velocity. But because of this extra term, so we have another term is dij. K dot j, where this dij is a partial ki cj minus partial kj ci. So we have this extra term. So it's nice to see that only this gauge invariant combination under equation motion. So the C itself, this vector potential itself, vector potential in K space itself don't enter equation motion. It's not really physical. The really physical thing is it's a gauge invariant combination. So this DIJK. Okay. And to really contrast this with equation motion, we can just do this X double dot. We just make another time derivative here and to compare with Newton's equation. Then this gave us this M inverse ij the force. So this actually, let's call this force fi. So the force fi and plus dij fj dot minus partial dij partial k l f I f l. So we have these two extra contributions. Yes, both points. Yes. So actually, these two contributions are pretty easy to see. Because this k dot from here, actually, this is just fj. Just a force. If you make a time derivative, the time derivative may act on fj, so that's give us this term. A time derivative can also act on the k inside this, because d is a function of k. So the time derivative act on this d here, they just a partial dij, partial kl, sorry, this l. Then we have a kl dot, but kl dot is a fl, so just make fl. I think this is J. This is J. Okay. So that's it. And what is M? M is the second order derivative of this dispersion relation. So second order derivative is like if a dispersion relation is quadratic in K, the second order derivative is the inverse of mass. So essentially, then we can get a comparison to the Newton's law. The acceleration equal to the force divided by mass. The mass is a second order derivative of epsilon k. So mij, so m inverse ij is actually the partial epsilon k, second order derivative, partial ki, partial kj, second order derivative. So if dispersion relation is quadratic, this M and J will be constant. So that's Newton's law. And then we have this something dependent on F velocity dot, force, time derivative force, and the square is quadratic term, nonlinear term force. So this is like a modified Newton's law. And so the lesson from this is, actually, I will not go further in this direction, but I try to say that the basic dynamics is modified, is changed in a semiconductor. So a lot of calculations, semiconductor, like a transport, conductivity, and things like that, should be redone using this modified Newton's law. You may get some corrections. Yeah. Okay.
This version relation here for the mass, does that mean the mass can be negative?
Yes, mass can be negative.
So what happens if the mass is negative?
Okay. So the dispersion relation is like this. for example. If you expand near this minimum, the mass is positive. If you expand near the maximum of the bag, the mass is negative. Nothing happens, just negative mass. But so what's wrong?
So the applied force is going to go backwards?
Yeah. So actually, this is a phenomenon of... Okay, so that's a very good question. So let's imagine. Suppose we have this band. We have this kind of energy band. I think this is kind of Brillouin zone. So at least in a seal, you know the Brillouin zone is from 0 to 2 pi over 8. That's the Brillouin zone. So suppose let's start by a particle here. We apply the force here. The K is very simple because the K dot is a force. So if force is constant, just K just drift. Here you can see the velocity is positive. Its slope is positive. So the velocity are increasing. Then when you reach here, velocity gets a maximum. That's the biggest slope. Then we keep applying the force, keep drifting. But now beyond this, velocity start to decrease. So this is where when acceleration became opposite to the directional force, the velocity decrease. And then when the velocity decreases to 0, here you reach a maximum band, that's velocity becomes 0. Again, the force keep applying this direction. So the Brillouin zone, because this point is kind of the same, then velocity start to increase. It's negative, yeah. Becomes 0, now the particle going backwards. The particle going backwards. And then the velocity could become maximum moving backwards. And then velocity decrease moving backwards and become 0. So this is called a quantum oscillation. That when you apply a constant force to the particle in the band, the particle don't move forward forever. They oscillate.
How do you have conduction in these things?
Because you have friction. If you don't have friction, you don't have conduction. So in the crystal without dissipation, the average current equal to 0 because it's a quantum oscillation. However, when you have a dissipation, here energy is very high. You never get there. Electron find all kind of way to lose its energy. So because of friction, when you apply the force, electron get to here, then they keep losing energy because of friction. It don't go on forever. It doesn't stop. So they establish some equilibrium here, and then you have a velocity together with a force. Yeah. But in a perfect crystal without friction, each particle just oscillates. And the average current became 0. Yeah. And but actually if you put in a number, it's very hard to achieve that. It's almost impossible. And because this energy is very high, this energy is a few electron volts, you know. And once electron gains some energy, it's so easy to lose energy to other things like a phonon, the vibration of a crystal, and it's just it's almost impossible to see this quantum oscillation. Actually, this became interesting to build a material with almost have no dissipation, and to see this quantum oscillation is pretty difficult. I don't know, yes, actually. I don't know. Certainly not in real crystal, that's almost impossible. I don't know whether in some artificial crystal this can be achieved or not. In real crystal, it's almost impossible. Yeah. Okay. But I try to say that in this correction, may modify a certain property of a semiconductor. So it would be interesting to see what kind of thing they modify. Yeah, so this is another application. Okay, so any question here? Yeah. Okay, so now let's go to this many-body system. But here I just want to raise a question here. Yeah.
So terms involving the magnetic field in the momentum space,
is
there
yes.
a good way of thinking about them?
Hmm?
Is there a good intuitive way of thinking about them? I mean, those equations, those terms, I'm trying to think. I cannot get a picture. I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah,
I'd like to get a picture.
I don't also. I can only see the symmetry. So like this is a K dot. Okay. So in this case, it's almost like a Lorentz force.
Right.
You know, like a X dot equal to some magnetic field times K dot. If you do have a magnetic field here on this side, we would have a Bij Xij dot. That's a standard Lorentz force. Lorentzian force. The force, the k dot, have a contribution from the Bij x dot, that we call Lorentzian force. And this is symmetric. Yeah, totally symmetric. So the x dot have a contribution from the Bij k dot. So if you exchange x and the k, or x and p, I don't know whether that may help you to develop some intuition. It's really just like if you exchange X and P. So that's why I call this the magnetic field in C is like a vector potential in K space. A is a vector potential. A is a vector potential in real space. So it's really just a very mirror symmetry. It's kind of duality. Yeah. Its duality is very strong here. Okay. So, So next we are going to use this semi-classical picture to handle the many-body system. The many-body system we are going to discuss is a many-boson system. Boson have many interacting boson system. So let's try to raise some questions, and then we'll address those questions in next class. So first thing I want to say that for non-interacting boson, or for interacting boson or for non-interacting boson, there's a phenomenon of phase transition. As a function of temperature, there is a phase transition at a TC. And there is a gas phase. And there is a superfluid phase. There's a phase transition. So by phase transition, it really means that for interacting boson system or for free boson system, it's a free energy as a function of temperature have a singularity. It's not a smooth function of temperature. The free energy as a function of temperature, say, have a singularity. You know, have some singularity at the TC. If you plot free energy as a function of temperature, have some singularities. Okay. So in the superfluid phase, in the low temperature phase, what is the specific heat? For the free boson, so let me just do that for free boson. For the free boson, the specific heat is pretty easy to calculate. That's a quantum statistics. And just do this calculation. The average thermal energy is from the boson distribution function, from Bose distribution function. It's a kinetic energy for boson 2m divided by e to the minus k squared over 2m over kBT minus 1. So this is a plus. Sorry. So this is a distribution function. Okay. So we can absorb this T kbt and m in terms of k make this dimensionless integral. So if you do that, what you get is a b over 2m 1 over 2 pi cube, and then square root of 2m kbt to the fifth power. Then we get some dimensionless integral, x squared e to the x squared minus 1. So here, what we do is that we just say x squared. We do training variable is k squared over 2m kbt. So we did some training variable and make this dimensionless integral. The key is that to obtain this temperature factor, t to the 5 over 2. The thermal energy goes like t to the 5 over 2 in the low temperature limit. Okay, so what? And then the specific heat is like a partial E, partial T, would go like a T to the 3 over 2. Okay, so that is a free boson. C goes like a T to the 3 over 2. That's what free boson. Okay. So why I calculate the C to 3 over 2, calculate low temperature space heat? Because you can see that at a low energy, at a zero energy, at a zero temperature, the average energy is a Grignard energy. When we raise temperature a little bit, then the thermal energy come from the low energy excitation. So therefore, the low temperature split heat come from low energy excitation. So why I do this calculation? Because this reflects how many low lying excitation do we have. So this gets some information about the low energy excitation. Okay. We want to understand the low energy property of the system, so this low temperature space heat is one way try to capture some low energy property. Okay. So for the free boson, this is what we get. We may ask, what is the measured results? Because like helium is boson system. Yeah, right now I just about to stop. For the helium 4. It's also it's a boson system, but the measured space heat is goes like T cube. And it just doesn't work. Free boson just doesn't work. Okay, so this is the problem I try to raise. So people usually when people consider the low temperature physics of a boson gas, they say, oh, boson condensation give a superfluid phase and et cetera. But the boson condensation in terms of free boson picture just doesn't work because the low temperature heat goes like a T to the 3 over 2, but the experiments is a T cube. Totally wrong, actually. So what we are going to do in next class is to find a way to get this one. To get the correct low temperature of heat. So we try to understand what's wrong, what's going on, and how to understand the TQ rather than this one. Okay, I will stop here so you can think about how to get TQ.